And this is Love Beth with Treasure Chest, a big band, signing off for this afternoon. Look to see you next Friday at 10 a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. Stay tuned for the journal after the Love's theme, and I send my love to you until next Friday. Signing off, this is WHFR 89.3, Treasure Chest, a big band, signing off.
WHFR Dearborn, coming up for the next hour is our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. That's why we call it new, is because it's a new edition. That's right. We don't say the same words we said last time. Some of them are the same. There's only so many words in English, and every now and then you have to repeat a few. However, my name is Jay Koronick, and the show is all about, I'm the main host here, but the show is all about news that is extremely local, the news that matters to you most, we believe is right next door. And that means we're going to talk about Dearborn and the surrounding areas exclusively, since we are broadcasting from Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn, Michigan, USA. So, what is happening here? Well, first of all, I am joined in the studio, and this is microphone check time, because we don't do this before the show. That would be too professional. We want you to know that we're mostly all volunteers at the station, and we work very hard in trying to do a great job, but sometimes... Well, anyway, I'm joined in the studio by our WHFR volunteer, who is our news director, Susan Morrell. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Jay. So nice to be with you here on WHFR. And I don't know about you, but the snow is getting pretty deep out there.
Oh, no, that's just in your mind. It's no more than 4 inches, so.
Yeah, but we're having it every day almost.
I know. It makes you think that maybe it's a new ice age or something.
It could be.
Now, I remember when I was very small, I thought the snow was a tremendous amount, but then again, it was a lot shorter.
So now you're over 6 feet.
Right. So it has to be at least 5 foot high before I think it's a problem. See, so because
okay.
I can still see over the top of it. But bad joke. But no, it's it is. You know, the roads are slick, but they're keeping them clear right now. It is a working day for the snow removal people. You know, it's not a weekend. Or it's not late at night or early morning. And I think it's probably in the 20s, which is not warm, but. Because of cars on the highway and the fact that concrete roads, even asphalt roads, are absorb heat and sort of radiate it back a little bit, most of this is melting, at least on the roads. So be careful out there, folks. But we're still getting that pretty white stuff from the sky. So, you know, be careful and take your time. Henry Ford Community College is not closed. I have not heard the snow emergency siren in Dearborn yet because I think they can clear the roads pretty easily, even in residential areas. Dearborn does the snow emergency thing, not because it's really an emergency that everybody's going to die, but just to get people to take their cars out off the streets, the residential streets, so they can plow them real quick and more efficiently. So there's actually space for the car to be parked next to the curb without all the snow. So they haven't even done the siren thing today, to my knowledge, and I've just checked email here. So it is not a snow emergency in Dearborn. But, in fact, all that means is, hey, there's a little snow. We'd like to plow, and we'd like to do it quick and not, you know, cover your car that's sitting beside, you know, next to the curb, which they will do. If your car is still there, either they'll ticket it and pull it away. That's a hassle. They don't do that with everybody. They usually just go around it, and then you got a foot or so of snow all around your car. And so that's nobody likes that. So it's not a snow emergency today in Dearborn, at least not at this point, at 1:04 in the afternoon on Friday, the 29th of February, the first time in 4 years it's been the 29th. So, although I think, you know, who cares? We just got a bad calendar that doesn't accurately take into account this extra day, and so we're stuck with putting an extra day in every now and then. So big deal, February 29th. Okay, so we're on to the news of the day, and Susan, why don't you actually start here with your story about, I believe it's about Jennifer Granholm, our governor.
Yes, Jennifer Granholm, our governor of Michigan, says the state is losing jobs without renewable energy mandate. And she says Michigan is losing jobs every day that it fails to pass a law requiring that some of the state's electricity come from wind and renewable sources. She wants the legislature to pass bills in March. That means starting tomorrow, requiring that 10% of electricity be from renewable sources by the end of 2015. She says that at least 24 states have such a standard and are attracting the jobs that Michigan needs. She has warned that a major multinational wind manufacturer that may bring up to 5 plants to Michigan to build turbine components could look elsewhere if the renewable energy portfolio is not passed. So that's her strongest point. And she wants the legislature to act, but it is unclear if a final deal can be reached because the issue is tied to controversial efforts to rewrite the law opening up monopoly utilities to competition in 2000. I don't understand that issue. Maybe Jay can shed more light on that. But at some point, Michigan will need more power. Utilities say they must have legislative changes before they build multi-billion dollar power plants, either coal-fired or nuclear plants. Did you hear that, Jay? Nuclear. Whose cost could be passed on to customers. They argue that without laws limiting how many of their customers could look to other energy sources, they would not be able to get the loans they need to build the new plants. So the critics, including both the companies that sell power independently and those who buy power from them, say legislation in the House would destroy competition. This is the argument we hear all the time, and ultimately cause electricity prices to rise. They say that they should be allowed to bid competitively for the chance to build new plants. So the utilities now make more money from every kilowatt they sell. Rewarding utilities for increasing energy efficiency, even though they would sell less electricity, ultimately helps customers because they would buy less power and fewer power plants would need to be built. So that is her ultimate goal, but I guess the utilities are basically not in favor of this. Jay, your comments?
The utility plants are not in favor of certainly alternative energy that would threaten their own business. I've seen some of the plans discussed by Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, alternative energy plans that they might try to get passed and put into place for the United States of America that would actually really require the large gas and oil companies to make investments in alternative energy sources, which you'd think they'd want to do anyway to sort of control the market for the future. The problem with renewable energy sources like solar is that people can do it for themselves. They don't need a big plant anywhere. And that's true with wind power, too, although there's such a thing on Lake Michigan, on the west coast of the state of Michigan, on Lake Michigan, where they could actually build, if they had the land next to the lake immediately available, what's called wind farms. In other words, they have wind turbine devices that have propeller blades on them, and they spin and they make electricity flow. And there's enough land in one place that a big company could put these wind turbines up in this huge field of nothing but wind turbines. And an individual, though, if they lived right next to Lake Michigan, could put up just one tower, a wind turbine, and it would just power their own house. They wouldn't have to buy that from a company. They'd have their own, which I think is the best answer. And solar power is the best answer for almost every place in the United States, including Michigan. It is a payback in 5 years, folks.
And can I ask a question?
Yeah.
When you say every individual could put up their own wind tower.
If you are in a windy area, and in Michigan that's only near the lakes. And we're not in Dearborn, we're not close enough.
But how difficult is that and how expensive?
Well, as I said, the payback is in 5 or 10 years, but we're talking about $10,000 or $20,000 minimum, even for a small one. The problem with wind towers is that they have to be tall to get the wind. They can't be ground level because there's buildings and people that block the wind. So they've got to be tall. We have a few ones from 20 years ago they put in a sort of a demonstration here at this college. And there's not enough wind, so it wasn't much of a demonstration. But they're about, I think, about 40 feet high, 50 feet high. And many places, many cities, they have regulations. You just can't build anything that tall because it wouldn't look good or whatever. But, in fact, in Dearborn, it's not a payback situation for wind. There's not enough wind in Michigan unless you are immediately along the lakes. And I do know that Wyandotte is thinking of putting up some wind turbines. The city.
Oh.
Because they're right on the lake. I mean, they've got, you know, Lake Michigan Lake, and wind would work for them, and the city then could generate some of their own electricity and not have to buy it from Detroit Edison or whatever they're called, DTE Energy.
Right, but how feasible is that for individual households?
Not wind. No, solar is here. Solar would be the choice. That's
and
the
how expensive would it be?
$10,000 to $20,000, but the depending on the house. But it is payback in 5 years. About half of that money will come at the end of a year from federal and state rebates, though. Energy credit, you know, for that upgrade. And so people should look into that. It is not easy. I mean, you got to go on the internet, got to spend hours, you got to make phone calls, but it is doable. One of our own students, in fact, our heavy metal DJ, one of the two on Monday nights here, Matt, he did the research for his own house. He found it was doable. I gave him, you know, some clues from some solar energy national organizations, and he just tracked it down. He did it. Now, sure, he had to put out, I think, up front about $10,000 or so, but he's getting tax rebates for about half of that in the next year on it from his federal and state taxes, and then he's immediately saving money on his electricity, so in 5 years, it's all paid back, and this installation should last 20 or 30 years. So it's all gravy for him in 5 years. It's, you know, he's going to decrease his electricity use to almost nothing that he has to buy from other sources in 5 years.
Well, wow. That sounds like a great plan.
Yeah, and of course, if you have enough electricity, depending on how many solar cells you have, you could even use some of it. Well, this is very expensive, though, to do it this way, but some of it to heat your house, too. Instead of oil or gas, if you had electric wiring, radiant wiring around, or even oil that goes through tubes that's heated by an electric boiler, if you will, that circulates, there's ways to heat your house with electricity, and it could be the electricity that comes from your solar panels if you had enough storage capacity. It's not a common installation. There's not a lot of storefronts and, you know, in every block that'll do this. But it's doable, and it will give you the payback you want. I think every city should try to get off the grid. That is, you know, have their own independent power sources. I think every individual should try to do that. Unfortunately, the upfront money is significant. I'd say the average homeowner, let's say in Dearborn, do you have $5,000 or $10,000 that you can upfront right now for this, even if you're going to get $5,000 back in a year on your taxes, even if you're saving money on your monthly electricity right away, that's still your upfront money is maybe about $10,000.
Yeah.
So that's the bitter pill, the hard pill to swallow.
That's an impediment, and especially in today's economy, I would think a lot of people would be interested in taking out a loan, but the financing right now isn't even available.
Right.
Probably.
Well, the rates are not real low, and home equity would be great if you had any home equity.
Nobody has any anymore.
With the decline of home values, that means the equity is decreased because you still got so much to pay off in your mortgage, and it's those people that are having to go into foreclosure. They can't afford the payment, and they can't sell the house because the house is worth less than the money they still owe on the mortgage. You follow that.
Well, so, I do, I mean, the problem is, you know, we've had unfair lending practices and mortgages to homeowners that were slanted in the favor of the lender. And there was writing there that people didn't read all of their mortgage documents, unfortunately, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, I think that's always the case, is that that people do get into very detailed and committing mortgage contracts without the help of a lawyer. Even some realtors are not careful enough for their clients because they want the commission on the sale. And I do always suggest, and certainly the local lawyer association would too, is you get an independent lawyer who knows mortgage contracts to read that mortgage for you. That, okay, many realtors are very good, very smart about this, but you really need an independent person who you're paying independently, maybe $200, $400, $600, for them to read it close and make recommendations before you sign it. And they will advise you about what might be risky. But nobody could have foreseen easily this kind of downturn. But you know, even before the downturn, a few of us cautious people like myself and others, we would not get into what's called an adjustable rate mortgage.
Right. I'm not in favor of adjustable rate.
It is too risky. Right. I mean, even if everything looks rosy and, oh, the interest is so low and we're bound to have a better job in a couple of years and we can afford it, even if it goes up a little. Well, some of these people found out their adjustable rate mortgage went up an awful lot. So they can't afford the payments anymore. And now they can't sell the house because they mortgaged like 90% of the value of the house, but the house value is down to only maybe 80 or 70% of what it was. And so they can't even sell it to pay back the mortgage. So that's why they go in foreclosure and why they go bankrupt. But, you know, I think a cautious person, but how can you afford a house unless you're going to risk a little bit of something? But you get a fixed rate mortgage. That's the first principle. If you want to be cautious, a mortgage is a big financial commitment, big, 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 and it's so important to your family. Never, never, never go for an arm, that is, because you might lose an arm and a leg.
Right.
Okay. An adjustable rate mortgage.
And always read the fine print of anything you sign, any contract. But even more than that, I think
the legalese, you need the independent lawyer, I'm afraid, that you can trust.
I do. I agree with that. But I think we've seen the law of gravity come into play here. What goes up must come down. You know, yep. I mean, I think that's a law of gravity. So,
well, the gravity is pulling us to our next story or two here. And I brought in... So I think, you know, who has to do these changes in the direction of alternative energy? The state and the federal government. They have to set up the context and even maybe in some cases force the energy companies to do something differently to encourage us or it'll give us the option to even stop using their services. I mean, you know, you can see you're going to save a lot of money if you don't have to pay a profit to another company to provide your energy to you.
But when I hear homeowners saying they're paying between $200 and $400 a month to heat their homes, in Michigan, that's quite a bit of money.
In the winter, that's me. I know. So I got a little bit larger house than what I need right now. But
and now all the prices are going up too. So you know, inflation has arrived.
Well, I thought I would share next this. There's two stories from the, and one of them I've just. Oh, you have the one about the greenness. Let's do that next. You have the greenness?
Yeah.
There was an article that was in the Metro Times, but it was actually probably released nationally about how green are your candidates. And the Metro Times took it. This is this week's edition of the Metro Times from this last Wednesday, the 27th. And they actually conclude with a rating of Michigan representatives. So why don't you summarize that, read the first couple of paragraphs for us, Susan, and then we'll talk a little.
Okay, this is the talking about the political headlines these days are dominated by Republican frontrunner John McCain and also Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. She is a female and he is an African American, and John McCain is in his 70s. But we want to know a little bit more about their demographic features and how they stand on pesky things called issues. And so the League of Conservation Voters last week issued its National Endowment Environmental Scorecard for 2007. So they each have an environmental scorecard. And so this is very interesting. And so they come up with a scorecard and they receive a score from 0 to 100. And that reflects the percentage of their pro-environmental votes. And if they miss a vote, it counts as an anti-environment vote. So that's pretty interesting. And so they analyze how the politicians voted in 2007 on political economy fuel standards for cars and light trucks. Remember that one? Renewable energy, policies for oil refineries, offshore drilling, liquid coal, the farm bill, oil subsidies, global warming, clean air, wolf recovery, family planning. I didn't know that was environmental, but okay. And so anyway, they counted their scores. So,
okay, I'd just like to say here, this is the League of Conservation Voters, not the League of Conservative Voters. So we're talking about people that are interested in ecology. Actually, they're also interested in hunting and fishing, too. Conservation is pulls in people that you wouldn't normally expect, including the NRA. But I guess they think all I can figure here is the family planning issue is that those that are not having more children than they need or can easily take care of, that is less a drain on our resources. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But I just wanted to emphasize that this is not coming from a conservative group necessarily. It's people interested in conservation of our natural resources. Some of them even, you know, hunters and very people that do vote very conservatively. But there's probably a lot of liberals in this group, too. So I don't think you can draw any conclusions about that. But, yeah, in looking at the details, they always say that God is in the details. Or is that the devil?
The devil's in the details.
It all depends on what you think of the details.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't think that should be in there, in my opinion.
But anyway, it's interesting that by this national group that comes up with this criteria of ranking whether or not it fits a conservation ideal in their opinion or not. How did our Michigan representatives do? Maybe you want to jump down to
It says John Dingell from Dearborn. He's our representative. He now heads the House Energy and Commerce Committee, and he scored 90%.
But at the very bottom of that, he ties with.
And let's see. Oh, wait a minute. I have to look here. Clinton scored. Oh, with weight at the bottom. Oh, I see. Here's the scorecard.
Yeah, next page. Sorry.
Thank you. Okay, Sandra Levin and John Dingell both scored 90%.
Yes.
They're very high. Mm-hmm. And John Conyers from Detroit, an 85.
And he represents part of this area, too, of course.
Yeah, he's from Detroit.
From the east side of Dearborn is
And let's
Conyers.
See, I'm looking, let's see, Thaddeus McCotter from Livonia, 15. What happened, Thaddeus?
Well,
how did that happen?
What happened? Is he a Democrat or Republican?
He's a Republican.
Yeah. If you take a look at this, folks, in the Metro Times, in this little box at the bottom of the article, it's kind of a telling comment, isn't it? Is that out of all the Michigan representatives to Congress, you know, senators and House of Representatives, in the top half, that is most of the first names, just one exception. It's all Democrats.
It's all Democrats.
And at the bottom is all Republicans.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, that would have to lead you to a conclusion that, and it may be unfair, of course, but depending on the criteria here of what is conservation, is that Republicans are not in favor of conservation of our natural environment. And that's probably unfair, but it looks like you could draw that conclusion. Certainly, they're not in favor, and we know this, and I'm trying to say something positive about Republicans in general here. They don't think government answers to the conservation of our natural resources are the way to go. Now, you have to know that it is our Republican president at present, George W. Bush, that has proposed and is constantly trying to get contracts for private companies to make profits off of our natural parks, national parks, and their natural environments. And even taking away oil and mineral rights from Native American Indian reservations. And he is still at it, even in his last waning days of doing that. He is the most unenvironmental, the most destructive president. And it's not that he doesn't love clearing brush on his property in Texas. It seems to be that any kind of business for private profit, he believes is good for this country. I don't accept that. Even the Libertarian Party, which is for freedom for everybody, including private individuals that run private companies, they know that there has to be some federal government regulation to allow the good parts of capitalism, you know, competition and bringing prices down because of that and so on, and a wide variety of products always being offered and the stimulus to be creative and original in producing new products, and that's all wonderful. And they don't think government can do that, but they still believe there needs to be some regulation of the businesses and industries that are clearly endangering our country and are anti-competitive. Okay, now it varies from libertarian to libertarian and from Republican to Republican, but mainly among the Republicans, it seems like anything that's that's good for any private business. Forget about the needs of the American people, and forget about, because they think there's trickle down or something. You know, if a business is profitable, well, they're going to hire more people, and they're going to expand, and that just doesn't happen in reality, folks. It's an interesting abstract theory. There has to be some regulation for the good of the country. Maybe not as much as we have now, but maybe some different kinds of regulation. I think most people are pretty scared about tainted beef. Now, tainted drugs, the latest thing is, I think it's heparin coming in from China, that's heavily contaminated, that drug heparin. It's a blood thinner, I think, or heart medication, heparin. And that's in the headlines of the New York Times today, in fact. And so it's not just toys coming from China, but,
right.
But even the contaminated beef that we heard about last week that was mainly being distributed to schools.
Terrible story.
Really cheap. I don't think anyone was injured by that. But still, we need, I mean, there's obvious reason the government, an independent, responsible group that represents the people with accountability, they need to go in and inspect and regulate that for the good of all of us.
I just want to give the scores for the three presidential candidates.
Yes.
John McCain scored a zero because he missed all 15 votes
right.
that counted.
So, you know, Clinton. He was busy campaigning, I guess, or he just didn't care to zoom back to Washington.
Clinton scored a 73, which was the highest. She had has a perfect pro-environmental record on the 11 issues she voted on. Mm-hmm. And here's the big surprise, I think, that Obama had a 67. He's down from 96 in the previous session because he missed 15 of the votes.
Well,
you know, so he's busy campaigning. He has other things on his mind.
Yeah, it does make you wonder, though. I mean, they weren't there because they were campaigning. However,
Are very important so that we know what their record is.
What's the most important issue? Do they want to stand up and be counted? If they can't vote on everything, is it important to stand up and be counted on environmental issues or not? I think so.
I think these are going to become the most pressing issues of our time. And my understanding from listening to the news just this morning is that Michigan is losing 25% of its water is being diverted already to outside states and outside users.
Really?
That's what I heard.
Well, it may be true because certainly, I mean, you know, Chicago, Illinois, Wisconsin, they are all bordering on Lake Michigan. Yeah. And sure, they use some of that water. It's not, you know, we don't own the whole lake. So I would think that 25% represents the states that border our Great Lakes, other than, and maybe it doesn't even include Canada, and Canada takes some of the water, too, because they border on it. So,
25% is quite a bit.
Well, and she's reaching for a glass of water here.
water.
Made you thirsty just to think about
water,
that.
Water everywhere, and not a drop to drink.
We're going to take a water break here at the new WHFR Journal. We'll be right back after these very important non-commercial messages that we think you should pay attention to. So stay tuned. I'm going to feature the hour-long interview or summary of the interview of Jack Lessenberry with Barack Obama when we get back.
When it comes to helping people and communities thrive, there is an old way.
A hot meal.
And there is United Way.
A hot meal.
A warm welcome.
A counselor who will listen.
Vocational training.
Community mentoring.
Resume workshops.
Drop-in child care.
Right here in your backyard and across the country, United Way is changing the way. From quick fixes to real lasting change. So we don't just address a problem, like unemployment. We partner with state, local, and federal agencies, volunteers, educators, and community organizations. And we go deeper to get at the root causes. And we measure success not by dollars raised, but by the families and children whose lives are improved, their pride, their restored hope. That's how we approach every issue we face in every community we work in. That's change. That's what matters. That's United Way. To find out more, go to unitedway.org. And before you give, remember, there's an old way, and there's United Way.
The Center for Lifelong Learning at Henry Ford Community College offers educational alternatives, Options include upgrading job skills, new career tracks, professional development, continuing education, or personal enrichment. And classes are affordable. Call to register at 313-317-1500. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
In keeping with the Black History Month activities at Henry Ford Community College, Thursday, February 28th at 12:30 p.m. in the Liberal Arts Building in L14, there will be a one-man performance of the life and work of Carter G. Woodson, African-American historian and educator. He pioneered the research and dissemination of African-American history. He is also the founder of the Negro History Week. The event is sponsored by the Student Activities Office, and the narrator will be Mr. Royce Kennebrew, teacher and consultant of African-American Studies. That's Thursday, February 28th, 12:30, Liberal Arts Building, room L14. For additional information, you can contact 313-845-9865.
Yes, Black History Month comes to an end today, and don't you feel bad now about everything you missed. We had special programming here, and I think right before the show, Betty did the last segment of her Black History special programming, and Henry Ford Community College did its last effort yesterday. So, but just like Valentine's Day, and even for that matter, Christmas, I guess I should mention, it's confessional time, folks. I still have my Christmas tree up in my living room.
Jay,
yeah.
Is it that beautiful?
I like the twinkly lights. I really do.
You know what?
It's so pretty.
I love Christmas lights.
And it's not outdoors, so people, unless they're really staring closely in my front window, can't see it, you know, and laugh. Oh, you still got his light. But it's still snowing, so it's like it's still winter. You know, it's not be different if there was flowers blooming outside. Yeah. Then the tree might have looked more ridiculous. But no, my point is that a lot of these holidays, like, you know, the meaning of Christmas, the true meaning of Valentine's Day, it should be every day of the year. It really should.
Well, I agree with you.
But we have to focus on it once a year just to remind ourselves that, oh, yeah, love is important and being kind to one another. And so we because people forget and they get into bad habits and very selfish behavior. And so I know why we have the individual holidays, but my feeling is that even Black history, it should continue to be taught and studied and along with all of the other ethnic groups too, of course, and everybody's contributions that were important. Women too, Susan.
Yes, women's right. Women's issues too.
you attended a Focus on Women presentation here, a celebration, if you will,
right.
Last week Friday with Susan McGraw, our general manager.
Yeah.
So we had both Susans there, folks.
Yes. It was a lovely, lovely luncheon for Henry Ford Community College, where they honored a number of people who are very, very dedicated to the college and do wonderful things.
I mentioned on my show last week, Alberta Muirhead from Dearborn was got a special honor and was in attendance, too. So that was nice. But, of course, hey, folks, you know, let's try to be fair and celebrate all accomplishments and traditions. Because we can all learn something from all of them, and they all have things that are important to appreciate, even if we can't support them or become part of them ourselves. So.
But I love this idea you have about the Christmas lights, because I love, love, love Christmas lights. And, you know, once they turn off the lights after the holidays, it is so dark in the wintertime.
Well, yeah.
It's so dark. And the Christmas lights are always so beautiful, and it makes you feel happier just to see them, I think.
It does. Almost literally, you sort of sparkle inside if you have. There are a couple of houses on my short block, and they still have their white lights on their bushes out front. And it's very, very lovely. I didn't put any lights outside this year, but they did, and they've kept them up. Why? Because it's too darn cold to pull them off the bushes.
Right,
you know,
and it's dark, and they're beautiful. Why not leave them up?
Well, it really is lovely. In other places I've gone to, for example, Tucson, a lot of the hotels there, and they have saguaro cactuses. you know, these almost like men with their hands up, cactuses that are 6-8 feet high all around, and they have them decorated with these little white lights, Christmas lights, we'd call them, all year long, just because it's pretty.
Well, Arizona is a beautiful state, and I've never seen another state that had the beauty. It has the desert beauty, and it's totally unique. It's excellent.
Plus, with these cactuses, once you get lights on them, the prickers are so big, you don't want to have to reach back in there to pull them off. You know, you're going to endanger yourself trying to pull off the lights once you string them inside the prickers, because it's about the thorns are about an inch long on these on these saguaros.
Do not touch.
So it's not good to touch the cactus anywhere. They're very sensitive to people touching them. You might, just by touching them once, you might cause that whole area to become diseased and die, that branch or whatever. So there's not too many saguaro cactuses left except in the Tucson area. And even there, they still get poachers coming in, digging them up, six foot high with all these thorns, wrapping them in blankets and shipping them to Michigan or someplace where they're going to die in 5 minutes, you know, for people to buy. You know, it's terrible. Well, anyway,
well, that's another environmental issue.
It certainly is, and we're not going to mention that anymore. Okay, we do want to mention what I told you I would do. Jack Lessenberry got a chance to meet with Barack Obama, and Lessenberry is local, a commentator, a teacher at Wayne State, and a commentator for the Metro Times and on Michigan radio, public radio too. And here's his article, his editorial, or most of it anyway, with his meeting of Barack. He said, on Sunday, last Sunday, folks, I was able to sit down for almost an hour with Barack Obama, the man who may, by this time next week, that's Tuesday, is the last big election day, Texas, Ohio, and a couple of other states, he might have won the race for Democratic presidential nomination. That he has come so far is the most amazing thing I have seen in politics in my lifetime. Think of it. This is a black guy, as we define race in this country, who lived for a while in Indonesia. This is a guy whose father lies buried in his native Africa. This is a freshman senator who nobody outside Illinois had ever heard of 4 years ago. Today is winning presidential primary after primary. I think the last 11 or 12 in a row, some small ones, but still drawing huge turnouts and running up unheard-of vote totals in state after state. Hardened cynics are hanging on his speeches. Millions are sending him small contributions. Grace Lee Boggs, who has been casting a mostly cynical eye towards all politicians since the 1930s, says that she, quote, can't get enough of Obama's calling upon Americans of all ages, all walks of life, to stop thinking like victims and start believing that we have the power within ourselves to create the world anew, unquote. The polls say that he can defeat his GOP opponent, the aged John McCain, a black guy named Barack Hussein Obama, leading the race for president of the United States. Hard as it may be to believe, this is all really happening. But who is he really, and is he really anything different? Frankly, says Jack Lessenberry, I was prepared to be disappointed. America has been swooning over Obama for the last 2 months. The last time I saw people gaga over a candidate was in Michigan 6 years ago. That one was Jennifer Granholm when she was running for governor.
And we know what's happened to her.
Yeah, I'm still gaga, though, but oh well. Lessenberry says, I was all excited till I went out to breakfast with her and found, to my dismay, almost nothing of substance. And I would certainly like to go to breakfast with her and find that out, too.
No, I don't think you will find the same thing.
I might stay gaga, you know. Anyway, would Obama be the same way, he was thinking? He says, anybody who has covered politics has had the experience of meeting politicians that seemed impressive and finding the whole to be considerably less than some of the parts. So I went to meet Obama, who sat down with the editorial board of the Toledo Blade newspaper, where I serve as the ombudsman. And that, of course, is the person who solves problems, an all-round troubleshooter. Jack Lessenberry is the all-round troubleshooter for the Toledo Blade newspaper?
For some reason, I don't see him in that role. He's so critical.
He must be desperate for work, first of all.
He's so critical.
And here's an anti-Toledo. If he's willing to go to Toledo to get a job, Toledo is a nice place, some of it anyway. And I've been there many times, 3 or 4. He says, but he's the ombudsman. So he might write a column for them, I'm guessing, in which he tries to solve problems for people. You know, maybe they even write letters to him that he responds to. Oh, well. He says, Obama came there to openly court the paper's endorsement. The Blade is immensely influential in Northwest Ohio. I didn't know Toledo was northwest, but I guess I thought it was more central. But anyway, and Ohio has become almost as important in the nomination struggle this year as it was in the general election last time. Next Tuesday, Ohio and Texas will hold critically important primaries. If Obama wins either one, he'll be the nominee. Even Bill Clinton admitted this last week. Polls show him behind in Ohio, but closing fast. The Teamsters, and Jack puts in an exclamation mark in parentheses, have now endorsed him. The New York Times had a story last Sunday, saying that after winning 11 states in a row, Obama was getting cocky. And Jack says, I didn't see that. I thought he had an air of quietly assured self-confidence. When the meeting was over, someone called and asked me what I thought. I was mildly surprised by my own answer. Yes, I said simply, yes, he might just be all of that. Everything good you're saying about him. In person, Barack Obama, he says, is even more charismatic than on TV. He's tall, lithe, coordinated. He's thoughtful and funny at the same time. His enormous appeal seems to be built on a combination of intellectual and social intelligence. One of the people present was, I knew, a Hillary Clinton supporter. Obama clearly sensed that, bore in, tried to win her over. I asked him a question about the nation's decaying infrastructure. It's like our roads, our pothole story from Michigan Avenue from last week or the week before. Would he, if necessary, support something like a new WPA, let's say Works Project Administration, the federal program that put the unemployed to work during the Great Depression? Obama responded with a sophisticated plan for a program that would assist states and communities to do just that by using a pool of matching fund money. His program made sense. But what impressed me more was that he had clearly studied the issue, assimilated the knowledge, and was able to call it forth without seeming like a policy wonk, you know, or just repeating something that other people had written for him. Bottom line, says Lessenberry, what he seemed to be saying was that he thought he could bring about change because he thinks we are ready to bring about change after the years of the lies and filth and greed of the Bush administration. Would he ask us to sacrifice? Asks Lessenberry. Lessenberry answers himself, yes, he would. We're going to pay more for energy, for gasoline, electricity, and that's probably not all. He wants to give students a $4,000 tuition credit and would require them to do a fair amount of national or community service in return. I had a student in my class yesterday. He just had a federal grant. He got into the class. We started a new 8-week term yesterday here at the college. There are some classes that only go 8 weeks here. And he asked me, do you have an extra textbook? Because he had the federal grant to pay for the tuition. He had no money to get the book. The book was $40, I think, $50. And, well, there's something wrong there, isn't it? I mean, if you're going to get a federal right. grant, they got to buy the books and
it
all the materials.
It doesn't
you can't,
make sense.
And I said, well, you know, you can't get the money back, can you? No, it's used now. The federal government's already, and he can't get it back as an individual. And even use it for something else. He's already used it for the class. He can't even get it back and take a different class. I understand.
Well, what I have to say
about
that.
I might be wrong about that.
They didn't think that program through before they started it.
But it's always been the case. There's always extra fees and materials, but they just assume they'll do the big chunk and the students somehow on their own can come up with the extra few dollars. He told me he didn't even have $4 for an audio adapter that's also required for my class, a little plug that would help your headphones be adaptable to all the different kinds of equipment we have. And I'm thinking, of course, if you don't have $3 or $4 for that, how do you get to the school? The bus costs something. How do you eat food each day? That costs something. I felt very sorry for him, and I'm still looking for an adapter plug, but I didn't have a spare book. You know, teachers do get desk copies for free, but even if I got a desk copy, it would take me like 2 or 3 weeks to get an extra one sent to me, and the class is like half over.
How is he going to get a book?
Well, I told him to go to financial aid, that our financial aid office does have short-term loans, work-study jobs. You know, it's going to be tough, spur of the moment. I mean, he should have planned ahead. He shouldn't have just shown up the first day not knowing what was required. But
this is true.
You know, so I feel real sorry. And that $4,000 tuition credit, hope it pays for books, too.
Yeah.
Barack, okay. But in return, they'd have to do some national or community service. They wouldn't necessarily have to pay it back in cash, but they'd have to, you know, work maybe for minimum wage or something to fix the potholes in the road or pick up trash or, you know, stuff that's got to be done. And we're actually paying money anyway to do it. And it's not, okay, it's manual labor in some cases, but what's wrong with using your muscles, you know, and doing good things for the environment and your community?
So I'm not clear about Barack's answer to the question. I know program, but what about the infrastructure program?
Well, he thinks, apparently, from my interpretation here, he says a sophisticated plan, as Lessenberry calls it, he's not in favor of the federal government setting up a work program for the whole country and paying them out of federal government money directly, but they'd give matching grants to cities or states to set it up. Of course, the problem with that is there's always money that's wasted when you send it through other people. We don't have the same problem they have in Afghanistan and other places where the money goes to the administrators and never even gets down to the people that the program is supposed to benefit.
Right.
But matching grants have not been too too badly run. Most of the money, 80% or whatever, does get down where it's needed to do the actual task that's required. And so,
but you're saying the state has to come up with part of the funds?
Well, yeah, matching. Exactly.
But Michigan, what if you don't have any more money?
Money to match. Exactly.
Michigan doesn't have any more money.
Exactly. So there's a little problem there. Maybe we need a WPA.
Hello, Jennifer Granholm.
Well, I mean, we can't set up our own WPA. We have no money at the beginning, even, see? So,
well, you see,
much less for matching.
It has to be able to fly.
Yeah. Well, here's the conclusion. Just two more little short paragraphs here from the Lessenberry meeting Barack Obama. Lessenberry says that Barack intends to do a lot of things, but adds, "My first job," this is a quote from Barack, "my first job is to build a working majority. And despite having an unabashedly progressive agenda, I've been able to attract independent and even some Republican votes." Yeah, they're voting for him instead of Hillary. You know, most Republicans hate Hillary, and so much so they'd even vote for a Democrat if it looked like Hillary might, you know, get a chance to win the nomination. There was crossovers during these primary votes, you know. Well, I'll vote for any Republican, but I'm going to go and cross over to the Democratic primary, and I'm going to vote for Barack, because they can't stand Hillary.
And a lot of them don't like McCain.
Well, he's not conservative enough, yeah. So who knows what they're going to do when the actual election comes up, but because there's many different types of Republicans and Democrats and so on. Plus a third party, which we're still going to talk about another 2 minutes here when I finish this up. He never said a negative word. Barack Obama never said a negative word about his opponent, Hillary, except that she is, quote, too polarizing a figure, unquote, to bridge the great divide in our nation today. And again, it's just, you've been around long enough, somebody's bound to not like you, especially if you have any opinions and any agenda at all. And I'm afraid that's a problem with Hillary from her days in the Clinton, her husband's White House, and also even as senator. Although I think the people in New York State, I guess they're mostly liberals, who have elected her for two terms are quite happy with what she's done for them. And as I've said, and others too, even conservatives, that she is hard-working senator, that she does her research. Yes, she has her liberal points of view, but she really spends a lot of time. She doesn't go on long vacations. She works long hours every day. She's got a hard-working staff, and so she is... you know, whether or not you agree with what she's doing is another thing, but the people in New York think she is, and even Democrats, other Democrats and Republicans especially in Congress know that she is a hardworking, dedicated public servant. So that's in her favor, but if you don't agree with what she's dedicated herself to accomplish, then of course you wouldn't like her record as a senator either. Nonetheless, what would she do in the White House if she was the president running things? That's the ultimate question that people should decide. And, past, they say you can't change who you've been in the past. I think you can change what you do. Maybe you can't change your basic personality, but maybe you can change some of your actions in response to certain situations. Well, that's my hedge on it. So anyway, Barack believes that he thinks he can do it. And he says, quote, "I think," Barack says, "he thinks that's because people never get a sense that I am demonizing the other side and I am able to listen. So I think at a certain point this stops being a contest of paper resumes and people start saying the proof of the pudding It's a cliche, Barack. Would you not use cliches? Anyway, the proof of the pudding is in who is actually showing the judgment and capacity to lead. I never liked pudding anyway, myself. But and then he smiled at Jack Lessenberry, and that must take something. No, Jack didn't. Sorry, Jack. But Jack is verbally, you know, an imposing figure. He can get going. We've interviewed him here a couple times over the phone, and I'm scared of him, I know, verbally. But Barack smiled and said, and when it comes to me, they may think maybe the guy knows what he is doing. And so that's just how that reflection ends. So Lessenberry thinks, well, he's got some substance. Maybe it would work.
Just because he has it thought out and he has a program, you know, we could go into a little bit of analysis on that program, and I think especially the idea of giving students a $4,000 grant, is it really a grant if they are required to perform community service? Because most students, the grant is not going to be that much money. They're still going to have more time to study and to work. So
it all has to be, the details have to be discovered. In fact, if they turn the matching money over to the states, then the work for the state would have to be decided by the state. So every state may decide to do that differently. And whether or not they pay them minimum wage, I think they got to pay them in order to get there, and they got to feed them when they get on the job, whatever they're doing. So they would pay them minimally, but maybe a lot less than what a so-called professional pothole filler or whatever would be paid.
But is it fair, Jay, to call it a grant?
No, they don't. They say it's a tuition credit.
Okay, tuition credit.
Actually, so got you there.
I don't know about that terminology either.
Okay, well, again, it does affect your vote this fall, folks. November, it's not that far away. Okay, let's see. We're in March. That's the third month. November is the 11th. 8 months away before the big election, okay, of who's going to be president. And, of course, we'll know what the candidates are, but there's third parties out there. And last week, Sunday, on Meet the Press, Ralph Nader was directly asked, and you know he ran as a Green Party nominee for president in 2000 and as an independent candidate, no party affiliation, in 2004. Is he going to run in 2008? He definitely stated, yes, he will, as an independent candidate. So you can go to votenader.com or .org? But you can
.org.
.org. And give him a donation if you want. Is he a spoiler or not? Well, I'm sick and tired of that. All third party, all independent candidates will take away votes from the two major parties if they don't represent all the people. And as I've said before on this show, there's nothing in the Constitution that says there should only be two parties. I totally disagree with the few political scientists that say there must be two parties or we'll have chaos in America. That is ridiculous. Many of the countries, including Canada, north of us or south of Detroit, if you will, is not having chaos. And they have multiple parties and can be respectful, and people do have more choice. And we have more choices too. But you don't hear about the Green Party candidates, the Libertarian Party candidates, the many other parties, formerly called Reform Party. There are others that have been in the past called the Reform Party. Ross Perot started that one. The Constitution Party, the Human Rights Party. I don't think we have Socialist Party at this point, but who knows who's going to be on the ballot for president in Michigan. There will be, no doubt, at least two, if not three or four other parties and individuals like Ralph Nader who have a right to be there. It is our constitutional right that if you meet certain requirements, and they do, unfortunately, vary state by state, you can get your name on that ballot for president of the U.S. Now, can he win? Well, we just found out who his vice presidential candidate is going to be. Just mention a little bit, Susan.
Yes, Nader's number two for vice presidential candidate is Matt Gonzalez. He is an aspiring college artist and former president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. And so he's going to be the running mate. And he was nearly elected mayor of San Francisco in 2003 as a member of the Green Party. He's very considered to be a man about town in San Francisco, has had several exhibitions of his art appearing in local galleries. And he's 42 years old, and he looks to be quite a handsome man.
Yep. And he does say that, why is he running? And he is a Green Party member in California. Why isn't he running as a Green Party nominee for president? Well, first of all, maybe he wouldn't be chosen. And Ralph asked him, and so on. But as he says at the end of the article, I'm just grabbing the paper from Susan Morrell's hand. He says that he's choosing to do it. He's running in part to rebut the notion that independent candidates could only be no good spoilers. He says, I want to shift how people look at this. Okay, noting that the winners of a number of presidential elections had drawn less than 50% of the popular vote, and actually less than about 40% or 30% of registered voters, and of only about 30% of all the potential adults in the U.S. if they just register. So we haven't had a majority president for a long time. And he says, if people worry about us spoiling the election, this is Mr. Matt Gonzalez, who is going to be the Ralph Nader's choice for vice president, running with him. He says, if people worry about us, Nader Gonzalez, spoiling the election, I invite them to earn our voters away from us. In other words, Republicans or Democrats, hey, you say something that gets our supporters to vote for you instead. In other words, incorporate some of our ideas into your party, and then maybe our voters won't vote for us. So that's why Ralph is running, is to get his opinions out there. That's why Dennis Kucinich stayed in the race so long. That's why, for Democratic nomination, that's why Ron Paul has stayed in the Republican race, and he's even going to go right to the Republican convention with his delegates, few that they are, because he's get a chance to make a speech, you know, and get more people to know what he's doing. I mean, if these people were party-based, then Nader and Gonzalez, they would be the most noticeable, most and get the most votes as Green Party candidates. No doubt about that. And Ron Paul, a bunch of libertarians within the party, they are desperate to get him to be the libertarian candidate for president. Even though he was in, I think it was 92, and then he became part of the Republican Party. So,
What I see, Jay, is I see a lot of the independent candidates are getting more and more support as time goes on, all of them. And I'm very much in favor of Ralph Nader's platform.
Yeah, I can't go into comments here, but today in the New York Times, a new book came out from a prominent political scientist, and its title is The End of the Two-Party System.
I'm in favor of that. Right. Why
well,
not?
I think the problems are significant, and the way Ralph Nader sees it, we need to allow other people, whether they're independents or other parties, to have equal access during primary time, during television time, so that the general public can see that there are a bunch of different choices and maybe some better answers.
Well, Ralph Nader touches on an awful lot of issues that aren't being discussed by anybody else.
And I hope people do listen to what he says, because other people aren't saying it, and maybe some of what he says, maybe all of it, is correct. And always get the widest number of ideas possible before you make a decision, especially an important one about how to vote. It's not just voting either. No, you've got to do other things along the way, but the vote is the thing that's coming up this year. That's all the time we have on the new WHFR Journal. Thank you very much to Susan Morrell for being with me. Thanks to the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Dearborn Times Herald for their allowing us to talk sometimes favorably, sometimes not, about their stories. And they are a significant community resource. You get those papers and you read them every week if you can on your own, too. Thanks for listening to the show. Coming up next is the Highway 61 program with Joanne Korchinska. Coming up right after the special report, Night Sky Report from the Earth to the Sky with Carrie Zaitz, our WHFR science reporter.
Hello, this is Carrie Zaitz with your Night Sky Report. In our current climate of economic struggles, sometimes it's hard to see the benefits of globalization. As Michiganders see jobs flying out the proverbial window to other countries, it's hard to welcome the change. But it may be argued that the sharing of resources may be the only way to continue human and robot space exploration. and therefore help ensure the survival of our species. Globalization is painful. Rich countries, superpowers even, may lose some of what they have to support countries that don't have as much. Can a country, can a people be that altruistic?